Okay, very good evening to all brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. Today is the 2nd of May, 2016. It's a special Monday sharing. We are here to actually have a formal discussion on my second last teacher, the letters and the teaching that she has given to us during that time. It happened over the 3 or 4 years, I remember. 1987, if I'm not wrong. 87 or 88, I met him. Then, after that, 92, he left for Australia. Since then, I only met him one or twice when she came back. Then after that, 20 over years, I didn't see her. Then this time, because of condition, we supposed to go Perth, then go over to Melbourne. But the funny thing is, they go and cancel the Perth, return to KL, that flight. I also don't know why. Then all of them who were supposed to stay back in Perth for the extension, their ticket cancel. So they got no choice, they say, Brother Teo, maybe meant to be, they want to go Melbourne. So the refund allowed them to go Melbourne. Actually, earlier on, Susan talked to me, is it, Brother Teo, I need to make the decision. If I change my flight and decide to go Melbourne, I will burn the ticket. So it's not going to be cheap. Or I say, then you don't burn, hold on to the ticket. We see how. Well, I'm not sure. I still not sure at that time whether I can find my second last teacher. 20 over years I haven't met her. Then the internet last 5 to 6 years, no news. So I also don't know what happened. Then all of a sudden, a few days after that, I heard from the Pamasuri or who come and tell me that the ticket was cancelled. Then little Susan told me also. Oh, I say, like that. Okay, good. Maybe meant to be. Then I promised Mi Fong. Where is Mi Fong? Oh, okay. So I promised her, I said, if I can find the notes, I will share with you all. Then funny thing, the note surfaced. I also don't know how. Then that poem I cannot find. There's a special poem between her nature and Sakyamuni's nature. That's why there is her actually predicted name. But you keep it to yourself. Don't go and simply tell people. Otherwise, I tell you, invite a lot of trouble for nothing. There's a predicted name. Then how they cultivate together and all those things. Then during that time, very strange. Her teaching was very, very different one. And she was able to discuss with me many things where she knew I understood her. Then she even told me a lot of things. Then later on, it really happened and manifest. Then when she met one lady, the New Zealand lady, Patsy, some of you must have heard of this story. Well, this Patsy was a monk in a previous life in Sri Lanka, abbot of a temple. Then that time, my dear second last teacher was also a monk. He was cultivating in the forest there. Then this abbot that time, he knew this monk is very special. He supported him. He made sure offering everything was given. Then after that, when the old monk was about to pass away, this old monk knew he must make a request. She made this request. Make the request from my second last teacher. That life he was a monk in Sri Lanka, in the forest, up the place where the temple, where the old monk was the abbot. He requested for my second last teacher to take him across when the time come. It's like he knew something. Then my second last teacher agreed because of condition, because of what he did. And then the funny thing is, this life, She became a lady born in New Zealand, Fat Lady Betsy. And this Betsy, I tell you, Kwai Mui, you know, real Kwai Mui, New Zealander. When my teacher Acharyantra went to New Zealand for the first time, you know, she just saw on the paper headline, you know, the group of monks came down from the airport. Very strange, you know, is it? Her heart here, the nature, all of a sudden, like felt something, you know, that she must go and see this monk. Then she went. After she went, end up following the monk. Then later on, follow the monk back to Thailand, stay there 3 months. At the end of the 3 months, before the end, I went there with another Dharma friend. Then we met her and the friend Creed there. I told you all before that Acharyantra put us on the top chief disciples, Kuti, up there. Then she and that Creed, they saw us Malaysian. Then they asked us, who are you? How come you are so special? I said, I also don't know. We came from Malaysia. We are Malaysian. Well, then we start to talk. Then after that, he came to know a lot of things about me. And they were conditioned to talk about my teachers from Acharyantra until my second last teacher. Then after that, they all intend to apply for permission to stay at the Kuti I stay after I left. No? Somehow, Kreet and her go and ask. Acharyantra said, no, not meant for other people to stay. Monk also cannot stay. It's the chief disciples' Kuti. Well, then only they realize, cannot. Then they make the decision to ask me for permission whether he can follow me all the way here to meet my second last teacher with Kreet. You know what happened? That very day we arrived, we came by train. Then she stayed at my place, rested. The next morning we made appointment to go there. After breakfast, we went there. I tell you, the first thing she went in, she didn't even know who she is, haven't met her, nothing, only heard a little bit. The moment she arrived near the house, she felt something. Then she went in, she cried like anything, and straight away kneel in front, pay respect, crying, sobbing for the whole 2-3 hour session. Then later on only, as usual, we asked our second last teacher, you know what she told us, you know who she is or not? She was that old monk that I told you. That's why she know. Then after that, she came out of Betsy. She is so new to Buddhism. I asked her, why you cry until like that? She said, Pratil, do you know who she is or not? I say, I know a bit, but do you know? He said, yeah, she is the one I've been looking for. He said, then she knew, no, her nature is different. She mentioned that word, no. I also was caught by surprise. No. How can she know? Then later on, she took down that poem. He said, this poem, I only give it to Patsy and Theo, the two of us, because of the affinity. So she got a copy, I got a copy. But I don't know where I placed my original. And that day, actually after I promised to share on Monday, I still haven't found that copy. I only found my letter and the poem and the teaching. I haven't found that copy. Then the last night or the night before, I think before the house dana, I asked myself, where can I keep this thing? It has to be somewhere that I am comfortable because I don't want this to fall into the wrong hand. Then I remember one place I didn't check, my safe. I haven't gone to my safe for a very long time. Well, really inside that safe. Because he told me, cannot simply distribute. And only give to me and that Betsy. So because of that, my wife saw, then there was a lot of joy. That is it, maybe meant to be. That's why today's sharing is very unique. Okay, before I continue, we better do our simple puja. We compose our mind. Huh? We just do the salutation. Huh? Today the lily was brought by Sister Hui Rong, I think. Huh? So my wife told her no puja. I said, never mind, bring. Then this one was the old one. That one also old one. Huh? Anyway, we all should rejoice. Huh? Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, we will do the usual chanting, but we will stop at the five precepts. Namo Bunsi Sijia Moni Fo. Namo Bunsi Sijia Moni Fo. Namo Bunsi Sijia Moni Fo. Namo Amito Fo. Namo Amito Fo. Namo Amito Fo. Namo Quansing Pusa. Namo Quansing Pusa. Namo Quansing Pusa. Namo Mila Fo. Namo Mila Fo. Namo Mila Fo. Namo Pusien Pusa. Namo Pusien Pusa. Namo Pusien Pusa. Namo Fo Pusa. Namo Fo Pusa. Namo Fo Pusa. Arahang Sama Sambuddho Bhagava. Buddhang Bhagavantang Abhivademi. Suakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang Namasami. Supatipanno Bhagavato Sakkasangho Sanghang Namami. Okay, we will chant Namo Tassa now. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa. Buddhang saranang gacchami, Dhammang saranang gacchami, Sanghang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami, Tatiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami, Tatiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami, Tatiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. Panati pata viramani sikha padang samadhiyami. Adinadana viramani sikha padang samadhiyami. Kamesu micacara viramani sikha padang samadhiyami. Musawada viramani sikha padang samadhiyami. Sura miraya majjhapamadatana viramani sikha padang samadhiyami. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, we will pay respect to Triple Jam. Buddhang Pachemi. Dhammang Pachemi. สังหังปุจเจมิโอเค you all can be seated นะ I think somebody just came okay before we start นะ I think some of you some of you may not know who my second last teacher is I show you her photo This is the lady. She is a lay person this life. So she is also from Malaysia, born in Penang. This photo was taken in the year 1990 at her house. So at least you get to see her photograph. So by now she should be around 70 plus or 80 years old, I think. I also not sure where she is, but don't worry. If there is condition meant to be, you will see her. Her nature is very unique, but I don't know what happened over the last 20 over years. Because her understanding and her cultivation is very unique, but it just doesn't make sense. Don't know what happened. The thing just became what it is. I also don't know what happened until if I met her, maybe I can develop a clearer understanding of what happened. But at that time when he shared with us and teach us, then how I can feel her nature, her energy and the special teaching. At that time, according to my understanding at that time, if condition were to prevail, she will become very, very famous and very good. But I don't know what happened after I left her. The group that was with her, they don't have people who can understand her. Then even the Malaysian group, at one time I heard after 2-3 years, he go to Melbourne every year, he come back. After a few years, he said, no point. He is not coming back because nobody is serious. Nobody is really cultivating. Then she didn't come back. Then after that in Australia, I also don't know what happened. But it must have its causes and conditions. So that one, just for info, not important. What is more important is I will share with you tonight some of the things that she gave it to us during the year 1988, 89, 90, 91, and 92, I think that 4 or 5 years. These are the beautiful teachings that came. Then there's one letter she wrote to me. I will also read to you, and then we will share. Then I told you the poem she wrote about her life, her karmic inheritance, then extension of the poem Sakyamuni Buddha and Mahaviru. Maha is great, Viru is hero, great hero. So this name is a very unique name. So this is the prediction, the name, according to what I was told. But keep it to yourself. More important is to develop the faith and the understanding of what she shared. This first poem is something to do with to be awakened. She wrote this in the year, no date. So I read to you this first poem. To be awakened means what? You need to develop all this, she said. Be aware of your thoughts. Understand their nature. Develop wisdom to subdue them so that they disturb no more. Mindful of the sense door, the constant contact with sense object, just be aware without grasping or clinging. Know them for what they are, They are transient or transitory and illusionary. Wrong view obstruct. Attachment to view obstruct. So because of that, he said, many people are attached to views, attached to Dhamma. They are all stumbling blocks. One must experience in order to realize the truth, so that one becomes the truth, the living reality, and does not cling to concept of truth or concept of reality. Be always with the moment. Keep track of yourself 24 hours, so that one becomes the mindfulness or awareness itself. Means you are always with your true mind. Pure mindfulness or awareness with no duality or opposites. Just one consciousness that points to the middle way. Sense or consciousness return to alaya consciousness. One surely will awaken. Truth will be realized. In one's heart, one's nature is the origination, cessation, and the nature of all nature. Awaken to one's own nature by consistent, diligent cultivation from the heart. This is the way of one's heart and nature. Tune into oneself. Know thyself. In knowing oneself sincerely, one sincerely knows. In knowing oneself truly, one truly knows. In knowing oneself absolutely, one absolutely knows. Both Buddhas and Mara are in oneself. Some say yin and yang. The original and the created are part of the one nature. The phenomenal world and the noumenal, they are actually one. One returns the phenomena to the noumenal and realize the penetration of all phenomena and noumenal. Both the phenomenal and noumenal are part of the Tathagata's nature. The voidness, the creations, the supramundane, the mundane, the zero and the infinity, the Tathagata is both nothing and everything, absolutely transcendental, yet immanent, to be everywhere and yet nowhere. In the emptiness of his heart, he sees the universe and cosmos. In the silence of his heart, he hears all sound. In the stillness of his heart, he knew all activity. In the whiteness of all, in the whiteness, all exists. White is all. All are white. Everything is nothing. Nothing is everything. So a thing is not. Is both is and is not. Is neither. Is neither. Is no. Is not. Is none. Is not. If you want to cultivate till Buddhahood, cultivate with your heart sincerely, truly, absolutely. Realize the heart of all heart. One is all. All are one. To know yet not knowing. To return to the source. To come for the benefits of all living beings. To come into the mundane world in mundane form. From the heart of the universe and the cosmos, may all benefits. Then Sai Mahaviro. So this was one of the earlier poems. Then the other one is about the truth within. I read to you. Huh? He said, often I'm without words. My heart just knows. The woes of the world touch me deeply. I know I have come for the sake of all living beings, to light up the world for all, to show them the path home, to take them from the jaws of suffering, to set them forever free, so that they can return to their divine source. I see all beings as one, all are part of the universal life. I know the thread that connects all life, the pulse that beats in all heart, for I am one with all. The life force is the same everywhere, from the one all have come, to the one all can return. If only living beings can trace their track and find their footprints in space and time. Is this world your real home? Are your possessions really yours? Now often, do objects change hands or decay and disintegrate? It will soon be time to say goodbye, ending another cycle of the segmented life. Are you aware that at the heart of all is the uncreated? The creator and the creation, or the created, they are one. It is the interplay of these three that makes up the universe and beyond. That is the beginning and the end of all. You can find yourself, your own true self nature, the heart of your heart, then you will have found God. For God lives in you as you live in Him. We say the Buddha nature is in all of us, and we can become Buddhas. If only you can realize your own true nature in the nature of your own being. God nature or Buddha nature, they are one and the same. There is only one source, one original nature. Only they have been given different names, and the names take people for a ride. Confused, divided and irate, people separate, grow and clash. Yet they are fighting over nothing. It is only their own confusion and blind discernment or discrimination that drives them around the bend. It is very sad and painful to see humankind turning on each other, when in fact all are brothers and sisters of the same universal cosmic family. People are blind by their own ignorance, greed and hatred. Pastor Mia, my brother, sorry. Sorry about the interruption. I will read on. It is very sad and painful to see humanity or humankind turning on each other, when in fact all are brothers and sisters of the same universal cosmic family. People are blind by their own ignorance. There are three evil roots of greed, hatred and delusion. One sees the terrible conflict in the world. What on earth is going on? Who is really fighting who and for what? Who really owns the world anyway? You have to leave everything behind when you cease. For all the sins people commit, all the ills and evil they have perpetuated, who is responsible and accountable for them in the end? Why is there a hell waiting to roast and torture people? People themselves book their own place there. In the heart of each being is a gem. It is the cosmic nature, the Buddha nature, but in people it lies submerged, overshadowed by dark clouds of ignorance, buried deep in the mind of defilements, or in the mud of defilements. In the heart of your heart is your own true nature. It is where the voice of conscience speaks. It is the source of good in every being. It is the Buddha nature within you. May all the people of the world bring forth their own bright, wondrous nature, the Buddha nature, in the core of their being, and may this pure light of enlightenment shine forever for one and all. For there is a nature beyond suffering, beyond the confusion, the turmoil, the toil, and the ills of life, where turbulent waves never arise, beyond the touch of anything, the perfect peace, serenity, contentment, and bliss of Nibbana. May we all share the path of truth and reality. May all return to the one source from which all have come. May all return to unity, the whole, the totality, in perfection and completeness. May we have unconditioned love for all. May the teachings of the Buddha benefit all. The Buddha path has always been a cosmic path that penetrates deep into the hearts of all and transcends space and time into eternity. If you know the heart of your heart, then there is nothing you do not understand. Your nature holds the truth of your existence, locked in its innermost consciousness. The Buddhist practice is just to tune in to this innermost consciousness, to hold the key to omniscient realization of the sublime innermost truth. Is the substance of enlightenment and the most precious of all gems. May I have the opportunity to share with all the wonders of the pure spiritual path, the ancient wisdom and compassion of the Buddhas that have come down to us this day. From my heart I bring forth the Buddha's lineage and heritage. May all beings be well and happy, free from all suffering and enmity. May the light of the Buddha's heart guide all living beings home to their own true nature. This one is March 10, 1995. This one came later, huh? Mahaviro. Okay, so this first two poem is just for sharing. Now I read to you the letter she wrote to me. This one is more interesting, because somehow, after I met her, a lot of things happened, and she knew, because she in one of the past life when she was among that time together with Sakyamuni in India, he was one of the top 10 disciples, and he got very special ability to. That's why this life she retained the ability. She can see your past. She can read and know who you are. That's why he can recognize Patsy as the old monk. Then there were many, many things. Then there was one day, I remember, my son, my daughter, and me and my wife and other Kalimita, we were there. Then end of the session, we all make aspiration. Then my son also make aspiration. That time she very small, very young. Then this second last teacher was curious. She looked at him. Then I realized she closed her eye when she was trying to find out what aspiration my son make. Then she recited it. Exactly what my son make. It's very good. Very good. So that time, very strange. That's why I knew that one was not just something that you make up or what. She can really read and know. Then there were also many other things that we discussed, which were way beyond normal people's understanding and mind. That's why when she wrote to me, she wrote it differently. This letter was dated 20th. October 1992. You listen carefully. He said, "Dear Theo, I'm glad I finally bought the place, and thanks to all the devotees who has helped to make this possible." You know what is this place about? This is the bungalow in Melbourne. I have to look for that place together with Uncle Koo. We went there, help her. Then somehow condition was so strange, it's meant to be. Then bought the two unit. Actually, two title. one bungalow. Quite a big one. That time was quite cheap. 370,000 Aussie. Ellie Road, I remember, 7981. It's all like meant to be. She also very surprised we can raise this amount of money just within the small group of us. That's why he said, I'm glad I finally bought the place, and thank to all the devotees who have helped and make this possible. I have told Casey, this is a Singapore friend, Dharma friend that I talk about. They introduced me to my last teacher. Then I introduced him to my second last teacher, and he also helped raise quite a lot of money. And he got a friend who was a dentist in Singapore too. And they also chip in and contributed quite a bit. So he said, I have told Casey in a letter to him that he is really efficient. Because Casey said, that time when we raised the money, is still short of quite a bit. No? He told my second last DJ, you go ahead and buy. I will see to the money. Well, really, after confirmed bought, the money really went over. Then this, I told you that Christian that followed me there, Uncle Ku, Kung Fu fellow, guy. He, that time also, very close to me and to the second last teacher. So she mentioned about him. Ku told me, no one would believe that so much money could be collected by such a small group in so short a time. It was really not easy. Normally, you know, even Kayanamita, last time our Kayanamita fund, when it hit 10,000, I thought, oh, hello, great, really, we are such a small group. Oh, now it hit about, well, maybe over time, the inflation. Now the money is not as big as last time. But whatever it is, when conditions are there, things will happen. Then she went on to say, well, all I can say is, respect to Sakyamuni Buddha's word, because this was what she was told during the early day when she started. When your time comes, Sakyamuni told her, all your things will come and they will be ready for you. And when I really need something, this is according to her, it will be there at the right time. The devas here rejoice because I will be staying there, she said. Before I bought the house, Deva came to the house to tell me that I have already bought it. Then some hours later, the agent called and asked me to put in the offer in writing, a written offer, means a firm offer. Then within a few days, it was done. The Devas here are very active. In some of the houses I went to see, some devas even try to get me to buy their place by promising me that they will look after the place for me. I can understand. The devas here told me also, there are so many devas, you just cannot see them. Oh, sorry, you just cannot count them. They are like horse. What is horse? H-O-R-D-E-S. A lot of them. They are like hordes of them. Sometimes you are aware of their dance in the sky. The devas and brahmas always send their greetings and salutation. When the place is ready, they will come for the Dhamma too. Weird, isn't it? A lot of weird things can really happen. After staying here for a while, I have come to see that sometimes the Australian system can be quite cumbersome. This has, in a way, affected the investment climate here. The recession is still on, unemployment is still number one problem, and businesses are still closing down. Some businesses close down because they are defeated by the bureaucracy, as the newspaper said. Even renting a house is subject to a long list of rules that I forgot more than I can remember. So in Australia, renting a property is not easy. A lot of rules. I have given 1 month notice to vacate the place. It seems that I still have a few more months to go before the lease is up. I told the agent a few months back I wanted to extend till end of the year, but now it seems I must extend for a minimum of 6 months. If I shift now, I will still have to pay the rent until the agency can get the new tenant or until the lease is up. This is the first time I have such an experience. Even if I have vacated the house and handed over back the keys, even if I'm no longer staying in the house, I must still pay rent until the agent get a new tenant. There's no such thing as 2 month notice or no. Either they get a tenant before the lease is up, or you continue to pay until the lease is up. This is the first time I have to pay rent for an empty house. I do hope the agent can get new tenant fast. I may even have to pay for their advertising. You don't have this kind of stuff in Malaysia. It is no wonder some businessmen. It is no wonder some businessmen close down and go elsewhere, causing people to lose their job. Different countries have different rules or style of doing things. Then this part is regarding my experience. As regard your experience, it is natural to undergo changes as you go along. As layer by layer of defilement goes, the mind will become clearer and the seeing will become different. This is part of the purification process. As the coarse mind diminish, the fine mind will become more dominant. From the false will emerge the real. From the real come the false in the first place. So if one fades, the other will surface. The false or mundane mind is characterized by thought and images. The fine and purer mind or supramundane mind has less thought or images, so that it sees directly into the nature of all things without the hindrance of thoughts and images. The false mundane mind consists of thoughts and images. When that clear, you will see better. Since you have cultivated before in the past, your past experience will come back to you. You know what she meant or not? But at that time, I wrote to her, I said, I don't know what happened. Like a layer of consciousness, my mundane mind dropped off. Then that pure mind, that true nature, supramundane mind shine forth. Then she described to me, she said, yes, it will happen. Then will come back to you or will resurface. And you will find your own level in due course. You can proceed from there. You will take the Bodhisattva way as you did before. Polish up the sati and develop the samadhi. You will need to cultivate the perfections. The path of purification has become the path of perfection of the Bodhisattva. When I come back to Malaysia, I will talk to you about the perfections, the way of the Bodhisattva, cultivating all virtues, the strong resolve of a Bodhisattva. One will always change as one goes along, as defilement fade and the pure nature emerge or come forth. You will feel as though something has fallen off or a clearer mind emerge. It is time to wake up, to know yourself better and follow the course of your destiny. The past will come to the present and create condition for the future. This is the linking of the past, present and future, or the three periods of time. The Bodhisattva faces the endless horizon, for he does not know when the final realization will be until he approaches it. Wonderful way it encompasses the best of everything, bring forth the best, and produces the most perfect, the supreme, as though words can never really express it, or can never really express it, or how come same word, or express enough, can never really express it or express enough. One will transcend the narrow and limited and really reach out and expand. The heart and nature will open up and starts to pervade the whole universe. The selfish self, the ego, the egoic self will have to go. The self will have to go. The self is obstruction and limitation. Without self, one can merge with all and become one. Without the separation from the source, self born of ignorance, ignorance is still the number one enemy. To clear the ignorance totally is to realize Buddhahood. Bye. To all the very best. Then she said, I shall be shifting by end of the month. Mahaviro. So this was the letter at that time. So during that time, there were a lot of things that happened, and the way she discussed with me was very different. Then a lot of the things were not recorded. That time don't have email, don't have computer. I got to write letter. No? I write, send. 3 weeks later, she write back. Another week, 1 month later, I receive her. So this time, total 1.5 months already. After she write and send, another 3 weeks to reach me. So that time, everything was slow. So that's why I don't have my original copy, where I didn't photostat. I thought my letter, what for a photostat? So I also forgot what I wrote. But based on the reply, I think I knew what I wrote in certain aspect. So during the early day, the strange thing is, if you have your cultivation, your path, the first time I went to her place, I straight away can feel her nature. Then I knew this was kantan, not simple. Then as she speak, initially she very quiet, she don't want to say anything. Whatever you ask, 2 words, the answer. Okay. here, just nod her head. Then later on, when he start to, her nature starts to feel something, then can see that these are not ordinary one, also serious one. Then she start to tell us a lot of things. Then after the first few sessions, I remember, initially very shy, asked for permission once a week only go. No? Then later on, every weekend go. No? Then later on, weekday also go. then one day go 3 times also. Go. I tell you, then that time we like camp in her place. Because there was so much thing to actually discuss. Then for the first time, she was able to tell us about this other type of cultivation where Theravada never heard of one. But my nature can understand what she said. Then like, these are very familiar cultivation and all those things. And she also started off with the Theravada tradition from Sakyamuni. Yeah. But then they were together as Bodhisattva a long time ago. According to their poem, you will know. Now I read to you her poem. Before the poem, there's another letter. See? This letter, October, she replied. The next letter, you know when or not? February 28th. Almost 2 months plus later. He said, dear Theo and all, 28 February 92. Oh, sorry, this one came earlier, February. This one came in October. At that time, she said, if you have benefited from my sharing or teaching, that is good. I know that you can appreciate your own lucky star. That should provide inspiration. A lot of things can be beyond words. That is why people cry, referring to Patsy and all things. Why do you think they cry? Crying is a natural expression. It began when you were born. The first gulp of air, the first breath in the womb, then the beginning of a new existence, although arising from the old one. The book of my soul, of my past life, which you sent to me is interesting, although it contained only a fraction of the events of that past life. Just like I said, a lot are not recorded. Anyway, it serves to confirm what I told you before, that the majority of my past life were either in heaven or on earth, and hardly any animal rebirth. In heaven, the rebirths were usually more of the high rank, and on earth, many as king, and eventually all were ascetic. This does serve to give great strength. The record does show my past link with Sakyamuni Buddha. The link went back a long time and eventually evolved to what it is today. If I had cared for him before, this one is from her quote, so did he care for me. Then her poem Sakyamuni and Mahavira explain very clearly the nature of our past and present. The verse on page 12, that was from the life history of that top 10 disciple of the Buddha, because we finally narrowed down to that name, and she confirmed it. Then I found that book in the library. I sent the original to her. I only had a photostat copy. Then on that page, she said, the verse on page 12 are similar to the verse of my poem, as you yourself can see. You have heard of mind-to-mind transmission from the Mahayana scripture. You have heard me speak of nature's nature and nature-to-nature's transmission. You have mentioned what you have received unknowingly, but it has worked like the magic within. You and others had the experience of sitting in the magic hall. We used to call her house magic hall because every time I go there, my nature can feel her nature, and it becomes so different, so still, so silent. Then she always smiled at the two of us, that Christian, Uncle Ku, where he energy feel and he jhana kaki on. He also passed like got a lot of affinity with the energy field. So every time we went to the house, there were one day we were sitting there in front of her about 20-30 feet away. Then she smiled. Then after that we came out. Then I saw her smile. I asked, what is it? You know what she said? She said, the two of you really, really very strange, is it? Both are meditating, but you all are so different, is it? Both are totally different. And she knew I did the silent meditation, means mindfulness, awareness. I relax and I silent, and I can draw, I can tap, and I can understand many things. Whereas the other one do jhana, energy field. That one also hit all the 8 jhanas. And he liked to hold on to that jhana because very powerful, very strong, and very beautiful experience. Then later on, I think many things happen. But just to cut things short, this thing that she described here was some of the things that I shared with her. Because during the meditation, he called me, "You have mentioned what you have received unknowingly, but it has worked like magic within." Because when I was near her at her place, when I relax silent and I meditate, I realize a lot of things move inside my nature. Then I connect back very fast. Then because I also met my last teacher who introduced the gateway, and because of that I went in very fast. So meant to be because of my special vow. Then everything just happened. That's why she quoted that thing. Then also she mentioned about the magic hall. You and others too had the experience of sitting in the magic hall, which is her house. Well, isn't the way of the Buddhas and Bodhisattva wonderful? Remember, karma, condition and affinity are important. Can recall that or not? I repeat, remember, karma, condition and affinity are important. That's why you must develop affinity, develop the causes and condition for you to meet. Then you must have good parami, good karma, understand, good inheritance. Otherwise, not possible. Then she said, like you pointed out before, the Buddha's chief disciple had previous associations with him before he became Buddha's Sammasambuddha. Where I read in the Jataka story, I think those who have read them, they will know, Brother Te will know, all the top 10 disciples. Many lives they were together, Either Mahakasapa and the wife are parents, then Sakyamuni, Sariputta, Mongalana, Anuruddha and others, close disciples, they were either brothers, sisters or cousins for many lives. Then they take turns. Then there were many such Jataka story that record all this. So because of that, I wrote to her that time, I shared this with her. She said yes. Then she said, I will quote from page 12. So page 12 is from that book, the Theravada book on that top 10 disciple of the Buddha. Later on I read to you too. He knew my heart's intent, the master he, whose peer in the world has not. He come to me by mystical power with body wrought of mind. W-R-O-U-G-H-T, wrought of mind. Drawn by mind. You know, this poem was written in that book of the top 10 disciple after she became enlightened. Then she wrote this poem. Then this poem connect back. Say that somebody's car parked outside. You have to reverse. Don't worry. It's okay. My son need to go out. Don't worry. You can park across number 10. Number 10, nobody go out. Oh, your car there. Oh, you also remove. I got one space for... No, I got one place for Susan. Susan's car can go in. You go and open up. Number 10. Han, you go and reverse your tools. You go and reverse. And maybe Han's car drive in. Han's car smaller. Then Susan's car is bigger. Nina na control. Okay. I read on. This is from the text. After that life, he became enlightened that time. He wrote this poem. Then this life, the poem he wrote to me, actually is the same or similar. But before she read this book, the words are slightly different, but the meaning are all there. Then there is a lot of added thing inside the extension of it. That's why I say many of the things are not recorded. Yeah. Anyway, I read to you what the text mentioned. He said, "He knew my heart's intent, the Master, he." Means Sakyamuni Buddha. The Master, he whose peer the world has not. He come to me by mystical power, with body wrought by mind. To me, when further truth I wish to learn, the Buddha, the last truth, revealed. He who delights in freedom from diffuseness, that freedom from diffuseness taught to me, and I who heard the Blessed One's Dhamma dwell, constantly intend to keep the rule, to keep his rule. The threefold wisdom have I make my own, and all the Buddha's ordinance is done. So did he come to me by mystical power, with body wrought by mind. Wherever I might be, always knowing my heart's intent, so did I receive him by mystical power, with forces of my own nature, appreciative of his heart's intent, without words, we knew and understood perfectly. Then, now she quote her poem. Her poem, this line she wrote to me on, was this one. In times gone by, path crossed, bodhisattvas dedicated to the same cause, from our encounter come forth the spark that set our nature alight. Affinity like fresh efflorescence link our cause and destiny. I wandered alone, yet not alone. My company, the nature's nature. My company, the natural nature, and my teacher's absolute nature. My nature clearly reflected and contained their nature, and all perfectly fused in the one nature. In its bloom, the lotus blossom of one's own nature. In your nature is my nature, in my nature is your nature. In this oneness nature, we are as one. In the nature of the Absolute, forever we pervade. It is because of you I come, and it is also because of me you have come. These extracts are relevant to the verse on page 12. In fact, all verses are relevant except that this modern day verse take the whole story and event to the present day and into the future as well. Then she continued. Now eternally we pervade across all space and time, aiding and saving living beings. The gift of the Dhamma we always seek to give to the countless living beings forever and ever. When living beings are troubled by the world's cares and burden, just take the Buddha Dhamma to heart and practice accordingly, or cultivate accordingly, and all your cares will fall away, as tranquility and joy fills your heart and suits one's nature, so that one will always be peaceful, in harmony with all nature and natural condition, wherever one might be. For the truly pure and truly wise, a million stars shine for you. From my nature to your nature, the Dhamma seeds I hope to plant, to benefit you always, to guide you across the ocean of samsara, so that you can reach the other shore, Nibbana, the deathless, to realize the eternal peace, freedom and bliss, the realization of the deathless or immortality. The fruition of the path in the way. And for those who wish to take the Bodhisattva way to supreme enlightenment, for the sake of the living beings, to help them plant the Bodhi mind or the lotus seed and cultivate the lotus blossom of this own nature and the nature of the universe and cosmos, ultimately to return to the source, the original nature, the true suchness nature, the nature of all Buddhas. Then after that, she continued, she said, I take note of your past vow and present vow. It is to your advantage to make your vows as soon as it is possible for you. I am glad to see you using your heart to do the work. If I haven't used my heart to do my work, I wouldn't be what I am today, deep penetrating to the core of your being. If your aim is the Bodhisattva way, work hard, real hard, have no stone unturned, leave no stone unturned. Like I told you before, no work should be left undone, and we have to do to perfection. It is alike to realize this. Sorry, it is alright. Oh, she said, this letter can release. It is alright to release this to all those who have affinity. Should anyone try to discredit, it is only to their own detriment. My nature seeks its cause and destiny to fulfill its vow and do its duty. Nothing stands in the way. If one who come for the sake, sorry, of one who come for the sake of living being. So metta, huh? Mahaviro. So this was the letter. Huh? Then I read to you the what they call. Hey? There's a poem. Where is the poem? This one is the poem. You listen. He said, only for devotee to listen, no copies to be given out. This is personal. So I somehow put here, master copy, not to be released. Under all circumstances, she asked me to write the hell. So I also don't know where the original one is. I only got a photocopy. It talked about her life, he said, my life, my coming inheritance. So extension of the earlier poem, Sakyamuni and Mahaviro. In the grove and forest, the Tathagata's force was ever present. His mind force, his nature's radiation, his glorious pure energy linger constantly. I knew him wherever he might be. He knew me wherever I might be. Imperceptible and intangible to the external. Our nature always knew the presence of the nature of the Blessed One. Master he was at that time, but since the long distant past, abundant encounters have brought a compelling dynamic affinity that remains to this day and forever. In the days of his human presence, his force ever radiated to the true cultivator of the way. This is the one. If you really cultivate sincerely, you can detect their nature. Their nature is ever radiating for the real cultivator of the way. That's why I say, in the days of his human presence, his force ever radiated to the true cultivators of the way. To all those who have condition and affinity, especially those who are close to him. Means you have affinity with him. In the hours of the night, in the dawn and eventide, the master's presence was ever lingered. As I sat in the midst of nature, my work to perfection, my way to accomplish. Even in the Chana ground, I took up residence. The nature of the Chana ground to fully realize, to pursue all Dhamma to extinction, to find the truth, to realize and return to the source. As by the Chana ground, I kept vigilant. The Master, knowing my heart's intent, his nature's force through the distant radiated, even in the foul China ground. My heart rose to such high of ecstasy. The China ground with all its gruesome content fade into the distant and vanish forever. There never had been a China ground, if man had not created it for his own foul form. In the dawn of truth, it never existed. The power of truth, the power of reality, filled the nature through and through. The potency of affinity brought his nature's force to me. Our nature like up in perfect harmony, even in this lifetime. When I first started meditation, on my first day in the temple, he appeared before me. Standing still, he smiled like he knew me. His grace never left me. At sight of him, my nature arose. White light radiated from my body in all its radiance. I felt like I was his son. I was his son then. And he was father to me. In my meditation after that, he called to me, "Arise, pure white being of the Brahma world. Your time will come soon, and your things will come to you." His light ever shined for me. My light filled his being just the same. To be truly worthy of him, my light will forever shine for all living beings in the entire existence. Son of the Tathagata, with the banner of the Tathagata, continuing the legacy of the Buddha, way of the Supreme Buddha, for the new generations of living beings. In the oneness of nature, we are as one never before, unlikely ever to happen again in the history of Buddhas and mankind. Sakyamuni and Mahaviro, for all eternity, nature's nature. That's the end of his latest poem, the last poem. Then that part, he said, the first time she went for meditation at the temple. You know which temple is it? The Thai temple, Chetiawan. What Chetiawan? That time she went there, because she also don't know what happened at that time. All of a sudden, there's an urge to meditate. You know? That time she was just a housewife. She don't know anything about meditation. Then she heard people say at night, there is somebody teaching there. Then she went there according to her. She sat at the back. Didn't even talk to the teacher who teach. And she sat. All of a sudden, the meditation become very different. Then, all these things happen. She said, even in this lifetime, when I first started meditation, on my first day in the temple, Sakyamuni appeared in front of her and smiled and tell her a lot of things. Then after that, she said, she just understand. She just know how to meditate. And the teaching all like inherited, just come back to her like that. Then after that, she read all those books. She can understand or not. Then nobody taught her anything. Then later on, when we went there, she teach me a lot of things that is not in the book or so on. That's why a lot of these things, like I used to tell some of the Kayamita. Sometimes you are really amazed when you are in this spiritual field. Even this very lifetime. That's why I told her, I said, initially, like, you think it's fairy tale. You say, how can one be so lucky? You not only meet up with good teacher, great being, you meet up with people of this type of cultivation and nature. Then not only that, later on, when I met up with my last teacher and many other, then I tell myself that it must have to do with this nature's past. Otherwise, how can it be like that? That is it. You must thank your lucky star for having such affinity and condition to understand all this and to listen to all this. And you say fairy tale is even more fantastic than fairy tale. So these are the things that really happen. That's why last time I said, I would rather not share all this until you are ready, until most of you are ready. Otherwise you say it's crazy. What is all this? Okay, maybe I stop for a while. You got any question? Or anything that you want to clarify? The mic is there. Yeah, pass the mic to Brother Tay.
Brother Tay, just curious, is that who exactly was that top 10 disciple that this Mahavira, this second teacher?
I will read to you now, lives of the disciple. I won't read the name first. But when I quote this one, you will know. Master of Divine Eye. Anuruddha. Master of Divine Eye. That's why he can read you like in front of her Pama. She was blind in that life. But he said Jambuwapi was as clear as the mango on her palm. Blind, but because of the divine eye. That's why he can read your thought and your mind. Then he can see back who were you in the past. Then the best thing was, this one got condition that I share with you. Tunku Abdurrahman died, you remember? When he died that year, that day. You know what she told us? That day we went to her house. She was smiling. Then I asked her, every time she smiled, I know got something. I said, why did you smile? He said, you read in the paper that Tunku Abdurrahman died, isn't it? You know where he was born or not? He traced, he was born a prince again. I tell you, how can you go and trace this type of thing unless you really have this divine eye? This type of, and this one come to her even this line. He looked at me the first time I met her. Later on, a few more days later, when there was condition, she asked me, do you know who you are? I said, I don't know. She asked me three times, do you know who you are? Don't know. Do you know who you are? Don't know. Do you know how you come? Don't know. Do you know how you come? Don't know. Do you know how you come? Three times also, don't know. Then the last one she answered, no. You came with a very, very heavy vow. I say, I know. Straight away, I know. Because this lie also, I make the vow. Then she smiled. He said, you will continue from where you were. He said, you were doing this for very long already. Then he told me, many, many lies, I was in China. Wearing all those ropes and all those things. And she also knew this line, enough already, the rope enough already, no need rope already. So because of that, a lot of things you cannot understand. Then how are you going to reconcile all this? But I read you the life history, life of the disciple, you will know this is one of the typical ones. Here he said, Anuruddha, master of divine eye, early life and ordination. The Buddha's father was King Suddhodana, had a brother, the prince Amitodana, who had five children. Among them was Ananda, who was later to be the Buddha's faithful attendant, and Mahanama, heir to the Sakyan throne. A third brother was Anuruddha. Anuruddha briefly tells of his youth. This was recorded in the Theravada scripture. Then was I born with the Sakya clan, as Anuruddha known, by dance and song, attended and by clang of, what is this word, sambal, wick, I don't know what it means. From this we gather that during his youth in the Sakya capital of Kapilavatthu, in the foothill of the Himalaya, he lived amongst the luxuries of an Indian prince, in the company of dancers, actors, and artists. Thus he passed his time in joyful pursuit of fleeting pleasure. Enchanted with life, he gave little thought to the meaning and purpose of existence, though the ancient hymns and myths which he must have heard did moot this question. There came, however, a day that was to be the turning point of his life. His brother Mahanama had been thinking about the fact that many members of the Sakya clan had joined the Sangha, the Buddha's order of monk, while so far none had done so from his own family. Though there were four vigorous young brothers, Mahanama, however, did not have a strong enough urge and initiative to take that step himself, and thus set an example for the others. Rather, he went to his brother Anuruddha and told him about his thought. He ended by saying that either he or Anuruddha should leave home and join the Buddha and his Sangha. At first, Anuruddha was not at all ready to have his brother's decision thrust upon him. He replied that he felt himself to be too dedicated physically to withstand the rigors of the ascetic life. Mahanama then vividly described to him the burden of a householder's life that he would have to shoulder later on. There are ploughing to be done and planting, watering, digging, taking care of crops, harvesting and managing business and all the same. And all that year in and year out. Anuruddha said that this was all right since all that hard work served a purpose, namely to enable one to enjoy the pleasure of the five senses. Yet he admitted all this work left one with hardly any time for enjoyment. Mahanama agreed. Many are the fetters that bind me to duty endlessly. Their father and their grandfather had done the same, and they themselves had to lead the same kind of life. This thought of endless cycle of rebirth and life of a never-ending toy took hold on Anuruddha's mind. Again and again he saw himself bound to life and struggle and die in an endless round. When he saw this, his present life appeared to him stale and devoid of meaning. So he decided to follow the Buddha and try to break through the cycle of continuous becoming. Immediately he went to his mother and asked her permission to become monk, but she refused, as she was not willing to separate from even one of her son. But when Anuruddha repeatedly entreated her, she told him that if his friend Prince Badiya, viceroy and successor to the Sakyan throne, would be willing to enter the order, then she would give him her permission. She may have thought that Badiya would not wish to grow up, to give up his chance to be the next king, and that Anuruddha would then not choose to part from his friend. Anuruddha next went to Badiya and told him that his ordination depend on Badiya's joining him. Badiya said, "Whether it depends on me or not, there should be ordination. I with you." Here we stop in the middle of the sentence. He had wanted to say, "I shall come with you," but he then felt regret. His wish for worldly power and enjoyment overtook him and said, "Go and be ordained according to your wish." But Anuruddha asked him again and again, "Come, friend, let us both go forth into the homeless life of a monk." When Badiya saw the sadness of his friend's face, he softened and said that 7 years from now he would be ready. Anuruddha replied that this was too long to wait, and by the repeated entreaty, Badiya reduced the time step by step to 7 days. He would need at least this time to settle his worldly affair and install a successor. He was true to his word, and so Anuruddha was free to go with him. The decision naturally caused much disturbance in the royal family. So that's how they actually became monks. Then I skip a bit. The young Sakya too thought Upadhi was right in not going back and allow him to join them in their way to see the Blessed One. Having arrived where the Master dwelt, he asked him for ordination and added, "We Sakyan are a proud people, O Lord. Here this is Upali, the barber, who had attended to us for a long time. Please, Lord, give him ordination first. Since he will then be our senior, we shall then have to salute him and do the duties properly to his seniority." Thus will the Sakyan pride be humble in us. The Buddha did as requested, and thus this seven received ordination with Upali as the first. Oh, they get hold of the bubble also. Within 1 year, most of them achieved some spiritual attainment. Vadiya was the first to attain arhanship. Oh, so easy, eh? As one liberated by wisdom, Panya Vimutti, and endowed with the three knowledge, Anuruddha attained the divine eye, Ananda the fruit of stream entry, Sotapannaship, and Devadatta to ordinary superpowers, supernormal power, the psychic, mundane supernormal powers. Bhagu, Kimbila, and Upali became Arahant later on, as did Ananda and Anuruddha. But Devadatta's reckless ambition and misdeed led him to hell. Then about the divine eye. Among those who were preeminent in a particular skill was the Venerable Anuruddha, who was praised by the Buddha as being foremost in developing the divine eye. Once when a number of eminent monks were living together in the Gosinga forest, the question arose among them as to which kind of monk could lend brilliance to the forest. Anuruddha replied that it was one who with the divine eye could survey a thousand world system. Just as a man standing on a high tower could see a thousand farm states. So easy, eh? He can survey all the world system like somebody stand out there can see the farm. On another occasion, Anuruddha said that it was through his cultivation of the four foundations of mindfulness, Satipatthana, that he obtained the divine eye. Wow, this one also can bring about divine eye. Eh? He also helped his own pupil to attain the opening of the divine eye. His verse relate his experience. In fivefold concentration, rapture, the mind in peace and unified, inner tranquility I gained, and thus was purified, my eye become divine. So easy, eh? In fivefold jhana, standing firm, I knew the passing and rebirth of beings. There, their coming and their going, I perceive their life in this world and beyond. The divine eye, Dibha Chakku, Chakku is eye, is the ability to see beyond the range of the physical eye, extending, in Anuruddha's case, to a thousandfold world system, which may perhaps be identified with a galaxy in modern astronomy. This faculty can be obtained by one who has reached the fourth meditative absorption or jhana, and take this meditation as the basis for further development as described in the Visuddhimagga. The divine eye is of a mundane character, means Lokiya, not enlightened yet. It can be obtained by an unliberated willing Buddha jhana as well as those on the fourth stage of emancipation. Anuruddha attained it before he became an arahant. The Buddha himself used his faculty during his daily routine. When in the morning, he would survey the world for beings who could be helped by the Dhamma. Through his divine eye, he also saw when one of his disciples experienced difficulty in his progress on the path. Seeing this, he often went to that disciple to give him advice and encouragement. As one of the three higher knowledge, the divine eye has the name and the function of the knowledge of the passing away and reappearing of beings. So this one, they can also see how you take birth. That's why he able to see Tungku take rebirth. he can be there to see your last thought moment, then where it go. Then Anuruddha's road to Aranyaksha, this one very difficult, no. He actually cannot trap in energy field. That's why they all jhana. Having acquired the faculty of divine eye, the venerable Anuruddha make use of his meditative skill to further his progress towards Aranyaksha. But before reaching the height, he had to face many a battle within his mind. Three reports tell of it. One, the venerable Anuruddha living in the eastern bamboo park together with his cousin Nadia and the Sakyan noble Kimbila. These three monks were so mature in their cultivation of the teaching that each of them could live alone on their own, devoted to spiritual practice. Only every fifth night would they meet to discuss the Dhamma, undisturbed by things or people. The harmony existed between these three forest hermits has become legendary and stand in sharp contrast with the quarrelsome monk of Kosambi. At that time already got a lot of monk quarreling. When the Buddha visited the three monks, he asked Anuruddha how it was that he lived in peace and harmony with the other two companions. Anuruddha replied, "In deeds, word and thought, I maintain loving kindness towards these venerable ones, in public and in private thinking. Why should I not set aside what I am mindful to do, and do only that they are mindful to do? And I act accordingly. They are different in body, venerable sir, but only one in mind." After the Buddha had inquired about their life in Concord, he asked Anuruddha whether they had gained any spiritual attainment transcending average human capacity. Anuruddha told of a difficulty they had experienced in a very sublime meditation they had practiced. They had perceived an inner light and radiance, and had a vision of sublime form. But that light and vision of form disappeared very soon, and they could not understand the reason. The Buddha explained that one who wanted to experience this subtle state of mind in full and have a steady perception of them should free himself from 11 imperfections. Upakilesa. These are defilements of insight. Actually, according to the text, it's only 10, but here they quote 11. The first is uncertainty about reality of this phenomena and the significance of the inner light, which might easily be taken for sensory illusion. The second imperfection is inattention. One no longer directs one's full attention to the inner light. That's why you don't silent, relax and just aware, you will get tricked. You will get deluded by it. Because your mind will start to grasp, cling and hold and play with it and get excited over it. But regards it as something unremarkable or inessential, and thus dismiss it as unimportant. The third imperfection is lethargy or drowsiness. This one you know, lethargic mind. The fourth is anxiety and fright, which occur when threatening images or thought arise from the subconscious region of the mind. When this imperfection has been mastered, elation may arise, which excites body and mind. Such exultation is often a habitual reaction to any kind of success. When that elation has exalted itself, one may feel drained of that happy emotion and fall into inertia, a heavy passivity of mind. To overcome it, one must make very strong effort, which is virya, which may result in an excess of energy too. On becoming aware of this excess, one relaxes. That's a key thing to meditation, is relax. And in a repeated alternation of extreme, falls again into sluggish energy. In such a condition where mindfulness is weak, strong longing may arise for desirable object of the celestial or the human realm, according to the focus of the inner light. which has been widened in its range. This longing will reach out to a great variety of objects and thus lead to another imperfection, a large diversity of perception, be it of the celestial realm or the human plane. Having become dissatisfied with that great diversity of form, one chooses to contemplate one of them, be it of a desirable or undesirable nature. Concentrating intensively on the chosen object will lead to the 11th imperfection, the excessive meditating on this form. Addressing Anuruddha and his two companions, the Buddha thus described vividly from his own experience the 11th imperfection that may arise in the meditative perception of pure form, and he explained how to overcome them. When Anuruddha had perfected himself more and more in the jhana and in those refined meditative perception, he one day went to see the Venerable Sariputta and said, "Brother Sariputta, with the divine eye which is clarified and supernormal, I am able to perceive a thousandfold world system. My energy is strong and infallible. My mindfulness is alert and unconfused. My mind is calm and unexcited. My mind is collected and unified. Yet this mind is still not free from clinging, from the asava, from the defilement. You know why or not?" That's why I told you all, don't use thought. Because she trapped in thought. Oh, sorry, he at that time was a monk. Even all these things that you mentioned, mindfulness is alert and unconfused. Who is saying all these things? Yeah? Who is saying all these things? Your thought. That's why he said, "I was able to perceive a thousand world system, my divine eye. My energy is strong and infallible. My mindfulness is alert and unconfused. My body is calm and unexcited." Means you think, you no more craving. Who say that? The thought, the ego, because your thought still actively meditating. Then thereupon Sariputta replied, now you listen, this one can give you wisdom. When you think, Brother Anuruddha, that with your divine eye you can perceive a thousandfold world system, that is your sakkayadity, self-conceit in you. That is the thought telling you. When you think of your strenuous energy, your alert mindfulness, your calm body and mind, that is agitation in you. When you think that your mind is still not liberated from canker, that makes for scruples in you, it will be good if the revered Anuruddha would discard all these three things. Now you can follow. The self, sakkayadity, then the what they call the mind that hold on to all these things. And the last one is when you are still frustrated because you see the defilement is still there, because you know they are still there, understand? That is mental hindrance, understand? Dislike, aversion, unhappy with yourself. Because you crave for enlightenment. And you say, "I have already cultivated, done everything according to the Dhamma. My mindfulness is perfect, not leaning towards the duality and all those things. Then I have divine eye. I have perfect mindfulness. Why am I still like that?" And then Sariputta said, "You don't hold on to these three things. You discard these three things. And you don't pay attention to them. That's why I say when you meditate, don't try to know. Don't try to do anything. Just silent, aware, relax. Then you will insight into phenomena. And you would instead direct your mind towards the deathless element, which is Nibbana. But actually before this, you have to insight into the three universal characteristics of nature." Having heard Sariputta's advice, Anuruddha again resorted to solitude and earnestly applied himself to remove the three obstacles within him, within his mind. On another occasion, Anuruddha lived in the country of Jatiya people in the eastern bamboo grove. There it occurred to him in his contemplation that there were seven thoughts that should be cherished by a truly great man, namely That of the Buddha's teaching will suit only one who is frugal, contented, bent on seclusion, energetic, mindful, concentrated, and wise, and that it will not suit one who lacks this quality. When the Buddha perceived in his mind the thought of his cousin or pupil, he appeared before Anuruddha and approved of his thought thus, "Good Anuruddha, good, you have well considered the seventh thought of a great man. You may now also consider this eighth thought of a great man. The teacher is only for one who inclines to the non-diffuse. This teaching is not for one who inclines to worldly diffuseness and delight in it." You know the meaning, huh? You know the meaning or not? Diffuse means what? Your mind, yeah? All over one. Heavenly rhyme, celestial rhyme, jhana rhyme, the energy field, they are so beautiful, I must have them. Means your mind is diffuse. Your mind is not silent, not still. It cannot insight in the phenomena. That's why he say non-diffuse. This teaching is not for one who inclines to worldly diffuseness and delight in it. The Buddha said that when Anuruddha contemplates these eight thoughts, he will be able to attain at will the four meditative. Here they put the word absorption, it's not correct. It's the four meditative mind. He would then no longer be affected by worldly things, but would regard the four simple requisites of a monk in the same way as a lay person would enjoy his luxury. This requisite will make his mind joyous and unperturbed, and thus be helpful to his attainment or realization of Nibbana. Imparting, the Buddha advised Anuruddha to stay on in the eastern bamboo grove. The Venerable Anuruddha did so, and spending the rains retreat there. It was during this time that he attained the consummation of his striving. He gained arhantship, which is a state of Nibbana during that life. At the hour of his realization or attainment, he uttered the following verse. This one was the one quoted in the letter. "He knew my heart's intent, the master, he whose peer the world has none. He came to me by mystical power with body wrought by mind. To me, when further truth I wish to learn, the Buddha, the last truth revealed. He who delights in freedom from diffuseness, that freedom from diffuseness taught to me." That's how he learned the last one. "And I who heard the blessed one's Dhamma dwell, constantly intend to keep his rule. The threefold wisdom have I make my own, and all the Buddha's ordinance is done." Then after that he talked about Anuruddha's cultivation of mindfulness, the four foundations of mindfulness. Venerable Anuruddha's spiritual power is marked by two prominent features. First is his mastery of divine eye, the other supernormal faculty, and second is his cultivation of the four foundations of mindfulness, satipatthana. He often stressed the wide range potency of an other's practice of mindfulness. Frequently, the Venerable Anuruddha was asked how he gained proficiency in the direct seeing or direct awakening, which include the five supernormal type of knowledge and the six as arahantship. He always replied that it was through the constant cultivation of the four foundations of mindfulness, mentioning in particular the superpowers, supernormal power or iddhi vidha, and his recollection of former life, extending to a thousand aeons. He also said that satipatthana enabled him to gain that perfect control of emotion or emotive reaction called the power of the noble ones, arya iti, by which one can regard the repulse as non-repulsive and the non-repulsive as repulsive, or view both with equanimity. He further stressed the importance of that practice by saying that whoever neglects it is also neglecting the Noble Eightfold Path. That's why the cultivation of the Four Foundations of Mindfulness will lead you back to the Noble Eightfold Path. We are the last category of practice, Dhammanupassana, is mindfulness of the Four Noble Truths. That will include the Fourth Noble Truth. And that this fourfold mindfulness lead to the end of craving. Just as the river Ganges would not deviate from its source to the ocean, in the same manner, a monk who practiced the Four Foundations of Mindfulness could not be deflected from his life as a monk and make to return to the worldly life. Once when Anuruddha was ill, he surprised the monk by his equanimity to bear pain. They asked him, how was he able to bear up as he did? And he replied that his composure was due to his practice of the Four Foundations of Mindfulness. So all these are stated in the text. Eh? Then there's another topic funnier, Anuruddha in woman. While most of Anuruddha's talk cited so far deal with topic of meditation, there was also quite a number of texts concerning women whom Anuruddha had met. There is, for instance, a text in which the following incident was told. Once when Anuruddha lived alone in a forest, a female deity from the realm of the 33 heavens, Jalini by name, appeared before him. In Anuruddha's previous existence, when he was Saka, the ruler of that celestial realm of the 33 gods, where she still lives, she has been his wife and chief queen. Out of her old attachment to him, she longed to be reunited with him in that heavenly world where they had lived together before. So she urged him now to aspire for rebirth in that world. But Anuruddha replied, of bad cause truly are those celestial maidens who in attachment cling to selfhood and desire. Of bad cause likewise are those beings who would be husband of this celestial maiden. But that deity had no understanding for words and ideas such as this, and thus she replied, they do not know. They do not know of happiness who have not seen the joyous pleasant, which is the mighty God Abbot, the glorious God of the 33 heavens. Anuruddha replied, you do not understand, O fool, the word declared by Arahants. Impermanent are all conditioned things, subject to rise and fall, and finally cease. Having arisen, they will always disappear or cease. Their ceasing, if understood, is happiness. So all these are the story. No longer shall I dwell, O Jalini, in dainty shrine. For me, rebirth has come to an end. That's why that form in mind, no more rebirth. So they will know. Okay? So this is more or less what we have to share for today. Okay. You can rejoice if you want to. Anyway, it's just to give you faith and develop the understanding. Because when you met out with all those cultivators, those great beings, their teaching is very different. And they teach you direct from their heart, their nature. That's why her nature was very powerful. For the first time I met such a being at that time. Then after that I met another one equally powerful, my last teacher. My last two teachers, their nature very powerful. But they came from different lineage, different way. As she said, she carried the banner. You know what the meaning is. Because Sakyamuni, they all have this lineage. They always must have the monkhood and the sana, the sasana. Because that is their way. So they carry that banner. So when they come, they have to carry on that banner. But this nature of mine different. I come for wisdom, understanding, and I don't want to, this nature doesn't want to have anything to do with specific lineage or what they call tradition. That's why they say, he used to tell me during early day, he said there's a difference between disciple and devotee. You understand? Disciple carry the banner. Devotee, they come. They develop, like we all call Kayanamitas Sana. We are Dhamma friends. So, it depends on your understanding. If you limit yourself to a particular lineage, that is also your choice. Where that lineage really can go all the way to Samasambuddhahood, by all means, it's still beautiful. But different people have different affinity and different understanding, so they come in different form with different understanding. That's why their vows, their cultivation is all different. They evolve on their own. Okay, now maybe you can ask questions if you want to, or whatever that you want to discuss on this topic, you can also ask. Okay. Oh, there's a letter I wrote to Patsy. I think I photostated a copy on the 17th of April. Oh no, 17th of March 92. I wrote to her. Then I visited my teacher Vivanga Ku on the 3rd of April 92. That was in Melbourne. 25 years ago. Anything? Oh, okay. Thank you. I read this letter to you. Dear Patsy, the New Zealander girl. Really nice to hear from you. She wrote me a letter and create again. As for create, my kid, really miss him. All my two children like him. He was the one that took them to McDonald's. And I tell you, their McDonald's is so big, double the size. When we took him to our McDonald's, he saw so small. He said, are you sure this is McDonald's? And you know how many he ate? Or not? He ate 6. Not enough for him. He said, why your McDonald's is so small, your burger, your that one really big. They all very big size. Patsy, I tell you, her size is really sadhu, sadhu. Patsy, I tell you, you know San Tien Si, she is more fat than her. But she is very strong. Her build is very strong. Tough but very fat. That body 3 times my size easily. 3 times. Then that time very strange. A lot of affinity. It's a real. That's why I say you better cultivate, because that old monk that live in Sri Lanka Abbot, suddenly this life karma Kwai Mui in New Zealand. But luckily got her past, can connect back to the Dhamma. Otherwise, even born Buddha Sasana, you take birth in the European country or Western country, the culture all different. That's why you must make that affirmation, that vow, the aspiration. Then when you come, the Bodhi mind planted, then you will recall, there will be condition, then you will connect back. Then that time you don't worry where you take birth. Because karma, unless you are a great Bodhisattva who can choose to come, and the condition, everything you can decide and choose before you come. Otherwise, you got no choice. You have to come. When you have to come, you don't know where you go. Then I wrote to her, I said, "Dear Patsy, really nice to hear from you in Crete again. As for Crete, my kid really miss him because he really clicked with them very well. Guess what? Junpat has got second prize for the drawing that Crete helped him to draw. And he was so happy and excited. I wanted to write to you and Crete earlier, but as Master has yet to have a permanent address, so I was thinking it's better to wait. Besides, I wasn't sure whether you and Crete have shifted, and there was no news thus far. Anyway, here I am writing to you and Crete, and I really hope this letter will find you in good health and peace always. As I have said, I enclose here with the following, as promised. Letter from Master to me and Nancy and Casey. Please keep them to yourself only. Craig can read them now. Regarding Nancy's letter, she has requested the names mentioned blackened so as to avoid unnecessary misunderstanding. Hope you understand. The book regarding Venerable Anuruddha's life history, tape dated 9 November 91 by Master. Read and listen to all this carefully because the Dhamma message are really wonderful and profound. Guess it will really benefit and inspire you and create. Guess that's all for the moment. Until we meet again, I would like to wish you all good health. Peace always, and may you all succeed in your good and noble wish along the path of Dhamma. May the blessing of the Triple Gem and our Master's nature be always with you all, with metta always." So this was the letter I wrote to her, but she must have shifted because the letter somehow didn't reach. And there was no reply until today. Okay, so that summarizes what I had with me. If you got any question or anything you want to add or share, you can. Okay, while I have a drink. Where's the mic? Oh, anybody want to ask anything? Ah, yeah.
Just curious.
Yeah.
Your second teacher.
Second last teacher.
Mahavir. Now, in the previous life when she was Anuruddha, a man would already attain Arahant. Find it that. Quite unusual that in the present life she can still be born as a lady, you know.
So very good question. She also asked me the same question in B just now before we started. So your question is what? How is it possible?
From my understanding, I would say that, you know, being already an Arahant and a male, so it would not quite likely be possible.
According to Theravada, they define it as impossible. You know why? The Buddha says so. This is my last birth. Understand? Anuruddha also says no more rebirth in the book. So how you reconcile? That's why people cannot understand. Yeah, because he and the Buddha, according to the poem, they have been cultivating long ago as Bodhisattva together. And according to her, even during that time, the close disciple, they are very close to him. And they talk differently, different type of understanding. So they only meet him after he became the Samasambuddha and became very popular later on when a lot of other devotees and monks came and see him. They have to wait till after the Devas. then only they meet away. That's why the Buddha sleep very little. He out of love and compassion, not enough rest for his physical body. That's why he has to pass away or parinibbana at the age of 80. That time, most monks can live until 120. In fact, quite a number of monks. But Sariputta and Moggallana died before him, preceded him. The reason being, a lot of people cannot understand. When the Buddha said, this is my last birth, when the Arahant said, this is my last birth, means he's referring to that form of mind, understand? No more rebirth. Because after parinibbana, you got no more delusion. In fact, most bodhisattva who take this way, they know how to die. They know how to come. Because they already perfected all those understanding way before. And even before they take the vow, you read the chronicles, it's written, you must have the potential to be an arahant. You know you can become an arahant already. Then in many lives, they were arahant before. But they make this vow. That's why they can come back. They can only come back with a form of mind. The karmic nature is still there. You follow, eh? Because every living being that come for eons and eons of birth and death, you have your karmic nature. But because you parinibbana, means what? There is no rebirth consciousness. Understand not? No rebirth consciousness means that form of mind, no more birth. This is my last birth, like the Buddha said. Correct. No contradiction. But bodhisattva come not with a deluded mind, understand? Not with a rebirth consciousness. They come with love and compassion for the being. That's why they pull out his love and compassion. They take the four vows, the four basic vows. They vow to come for the living being. And through this vow, love and compassion, that pure mind went into the form of mind through the karmic nature. That's why they can come, understand? But they don't take rebirth. But karmically conditioned form of mind with a pure consciousness went in. That consciousness, no delusion. No last thought moment with delusion, then conditioned rebirth consciousness. No, it doesn't go through that type of birth. It comes through the vow, direct, pure. That's why I explained to her also, Sakyamuni Buddha cannot take another life like Sakyamuni Buddha anymore. Understand? But that was the prediction that happened long ago. And that condition all this is one in a lifetime, very unique happening. That's why when it happened, Sakyamuni Buddha's realization of perfect Sammasambuddhahood with that form of mind arise, no more. Then after that, the nature, the Buddha's nature is always there. Understand? What is that nature? Perfection of his wisdom, virtue. That time perfection, that nature is always there in the universe. Understand? That one never died. That's why the Buddha, you cannot take away, you cannot bomb the image and destroy the Buddha. Cannot. So that nature, like my teacher told me, and you cultivate, you will know. They are ever radiating for the real cultivator of the way. You can feel their nature. That's why Maitreya and all those things, they can still come. They can still, through their nature, manifest and communicate with you. Kuan Yin's nature can still protect, guide, and bless this nature. And this nature has developed this understanding. And many lives it comes, it has received all this guidance, protection, and blessing. That's why it know that this is the way, and it can happen. But you must understand that these are nature's law that you can develop through your perfection of Sammasambuddhahood. When you take the four basic vows, like I explained that day. The first vow, you vow to liberate all living beings. That is to cultivate love and compassion so that you can come back, understand? So that the pure mind, that love and compassion can come because of this vow. You come for the living being. No more self, that's why it's a pure thought. That condition, rebirth, consciousness. But it's not a avijja type of rebirth. It's not the deluded one. This is pure, no delusion. Then the second vow is what? to cultivate renunciation means you have to endure and severe all vexation or suffering. What is vexation? What is suffering? The Buddha summarized as, in short, it is due to your self-delusion that condition you to grasp and cling and hold on to this phenomenal world. Through delusion, you grasp and cling and hold. And because you hold, you suffer. That's why I say it is the grasping aggregate that conditions suffering. Upadana kanda dukkha. So when you understand this, if you determine, vow, to endure and severe all vexation, means what? You are cultivating renunciation. You renounce all this because you know that they are impermanent, lead to suffering, and empty, non-self, not what you think. That's why when you can endure and severe all this, so that you got no more suffering, all vexation, means you can perfect your renunciation. Nikkama, that is one of the 10 perfection, renunciation. So all this basic vow is to cultivate all this love, compassion, renunciation. Then when you perfect the third vow, to cultivate and penetrate all dhammas, means what? To develop all of the perfection of wisdom, to understand living beings of different mind state, condition and capacity. Then when you vow to take them across, you will learn from them why everyone different and how they get entangled and how they can be free and liberated. That's why you will know how to break, help them to break karmic obstruction, help them to develop the understanding as how to develop the cultivation and free the mind and liberate the mind. If you don't have this understanding, you cannot teach. Even if you are arahant, so what? Because you have not perfected this perfection of all dhamma. Penetrate, you have not penetrated all dhamma. You have not developed the experience to understand different state of being. Different people come to you, different conditions. You cannot teach. You can only maybe share how you become enlightened, that dhamma only. But there are coming obstructions you cannot see. Even like Sariputta, that goldsmith's son for 500 lives, he cannot see. He gives different meditation object to him. He asks him to do contemplation on death. That monk got no interest at all. That's why he cannot progress. Then there is another monk, cannot even remember one verse. You remember? What the Buddha gave him is one white cloth. He said, you're going clean. The more he clean, the more dirty that cloth become. Then all of a sudden, he became arahant. You know how he became arahant? Because he thought himself very stupid. He tried so hard, but he got no memory. He can't even remember one verse. The moment you explain this verse, he cannot recall already. But as he cleaned the white cloth, he realized initially the cloth was pure already. But the more he tried to clean, the more dirt went in, and more defiled that cloth become. Then all of a sudden he realized the mind also like that. Originally was already stillness, awareness, pure. So no need to clean. You meditate with your thought, it's like cleaning, purify. That's why trap. That's why he straight away became arahant. You go and use a white cloth. You must have those conditions. That's why the Buddha knew. The Buddha can do it. He perfected it. That's why this life, I can tell some of those who are very severe ones. You remember Polian? The way he cried and all those. The first time he came on the retreat, I tell you, monk also scared of her. So eerie and that one. Then she told me, last time, you go retreat, you're gonna chase out. Nobody dare to take. Because they thought up here something wrong. No, it's karmic. Karmic. There's a karmic come in different way. And you don't know how to ask for forgiveness and break your karmic obstruction. You can be obstructed very long. Nothing can go in. Sometimes you can't even talk to them. A lot of this karmic thing. That's why even this one cannot talk on, also got way of freeing them. But the loved one must help on behalf, ask for forgiveness. Then determine not to repeat this. Then cultivate virtue, cultivate precepts, cultivate generosity, the Dhamma merit. Then invoke power of merit. You must invoke power of merit. Otherwise, you cannot bring about causes and conditions for them to recover, to come out of it. So all these are nature's law. And you have to understand them. That's why that four basic vow is very powerful, very important for living being to walk the path of Dhamma. If you don't have this type of cultivation, it's very difficult to even become enlightened. Because based on all this Jataka story and the life of the disciple of the Buddha, even Anuruddha with all the jhana with the divine eye, he was also trapped on three occasions. I mean, that time the Buddha was around, with all the jhana, divine eye, it should be very easy to become enlightened, isn't it? And yet she was trapped. You know how she became blind? I read from another book. He was so unhappy when the Buddha reprimanded him, say he's lazy, he take ordination, you have to be serious. That's just like what she wrote to me. You must cultivate your heart, That's why I said sincere faith and perseverance. That she was so felt so bad when the Buddha reprimanded him at that life. He forced himself to wake up to cultivate and study. Then I was told he used something to open up the eyelid. I don't know whether it was a fishing hook or so that one blind her, and she got no now right. Then the Buddha, out of love and compassion, teach her divine eye. That's how she perfected it. That ability. Yeah, he got the jhana and all those things, but he couldn't break through. So there are many Jataka story. Then even Devadatta was together with them, the seven of them who went for ordination. Devadatta was one of them, but because of his Sikhism earlier on, that's why this life he cannot back. He tried to harm, or he tried to kill the Buddha, but somehow not able to, but harm, wounded the Buddha, I think the leg. So that's why because of that, he got his very bad karma. He created Sikhism through what? He let a group of monks break away from Sakyamuni. Here he went and challenged Sakyamuni to go vegetarian. Sakyamuni refused. Then a group of gullible monks followed him. He said, "See, I already told you, we want to be more pure, more compassionate, vegetarian." He dare not. He will not. Then they left. That's how he created Sikhism. Then later on, he lost his psychic. He lost, Devadatta lost his ability to perform psychic. That's how he has a lot of karmic repercussion after that. Or after that, he become afflicted, miserable. He suffered a lot. Then later on, when he realized his mistake, he wanted to ask for forgiveness. He couldn't reach the Buddha. Before he reached, I was told the ground opened up. And he was swallowing. Jinja also same. So all this is clear record of what cultivation is all about. You are not careful, you are heedless, all this can happen. That's why you must be very sincere, very truthful. Then your faith must be there. Then have an open mind. Please always remember, wherever you go, have an open mind. Open mind means you are able to listen. Understand? The moment you have a view and close yourself, whether Theravada or what, Brother Tay, I think video always say, I was told, I don't know why Theravada or I to say this, but they go and quote the sutta, which was not wrong. Buddha said, my last life, that arahan no more rebirth. Quote. You are not wrong. The words are correct, but you don't understand the Buddha's word. When he said no more rebirth, he is referring to this form of mind. Just like the Buddha said, you are all born of your karma, heir to your karma, conditioned and supported by your karma. You are what you are because of your karma. And then you can say the Buddha contradicted himself. He said anatta non-self. Then now, you are born of your karma, heir to your karma. Means, got you, got karma. But you cannot understand that you is your form of mind. Fire aggregate of form of mind. And that is not you, the Buddha said. That one is just karmically conditioned. That's why he said, that one is anicca dukkha anatta. But that one followed the law of karma. That's why that one exists. That one is real to the existential world. But to the ultimate truth, that one don't exist. That one is impermanent. That's why non-self, empty, lead to suffering. So you have to understand what he means when he says certain words. You remember? They mentioned that thy rafter are shattered. Then all the other, what they call, ridgepole shattered, rafter all gone, dismantled, and ridgepole shattered. Means when you want to build a house, you need to have the ridgepole, the center ridgepole, to support all the rafter. Then only the roof can come out. So he said the rafter all gone, then dismantle. Then the ridgepole also shattered. Means you cannot build another house again. Means no more rebirth consciousness. But if he choose to come, he can. A form and mind can come through karmic. Karma, your karmic nature, can condition a form and mind. But you need to introduce a pure thought, love and compassion, which is still a mind. But without evil root. That's why it's not a rebirth, consciousness, born of delusion. No avijja, no ignorance, or no delusion. So these are the understanding that people cannot understand. That's why to them, they quote the sutta. They say the sutta says so. Remember, Diamond Sutta, we went through? First 500 years, what happened? When the Buddha was around. That was the era of liberation. Great liberation. A lot of monks get enlightened, liberated. Second 500 years become what? Jhana, Dhyan. Understand? A lot of people cultivate energy field. Then the third 500 years is era of the Sutta. You see, all the Sutta come in already. They quote the Buddha say before he passed away, you want to check? Check against the Sutta and the Vinaya. That's why all the Sutta, they quote the Sutta. Then the fourth 500 years, division really. Method, technique, teacher, all the division come right, until today. That's why the Buddha actually predicted the Dhamma ending age, how it will happen. So it's all in the teaching. It's how you understand the teaching. If you don't have the real wisdom, you look at the word and just take it literally. Then you will get into trouble. That's why I used to tell most of you, appear logical, but it's always the reverse of the truth. Yeah, what is logical is the mundane mind, the thinking mind. It's just like they ask, teach me how to meditate. Very logical question, isn't it? But they don't want to know what is meditation. They just say, teach me how to meditate. Then you're very gullible, isn't it? You're very logical. If I want to meditate, I need somebody to teach me. Correct? And then they tell you, you do this, you do that. Method, technique, all those things. This one come from my teacher. This one stated by the Buddha. Or sometimes not taught by the Buddha also become vipassana. The one that the Buddha use anapanasati, they say end up samatha. Don't do that. Very funny thing. But logical, because he said this teacher, arahant. That's why you follow his method, his technique, you can also become arahan. But they never ask the question, no. You walk like the Buddha, sleep like the Buddha, eat like the Buddha, you think you can become the Buddha or not? The Buddha is not the embodiment of what he walk, how he eat, and how he sleep, isn't it? His embodiment of his perfection, of wisdom and virtue. If you don't cultivate according to him, you can never be like him. That's why he said, he who sees the body never sees him. He who sees his Dhamma sees him. But he is the embodiment of the perfection of wisdom and virtue, which is the Dhamma. The Dhamma you cultivate accordingly, you see the Dhamma means you awaken to it, then you have the embodiment of his wisdom and virtue. And then you will see him. Because that is what the Buddha is all about. Perfection and embodiment of that truth or the Dhamma teaching that he has proclaimed and bring forth to the world. Okay?
Yeah.
Ah, 10:30. So no more questions. Finish. Okay, maybe we'll do the sharing of merit, transfer of merits. Then we will end. So today's sharing is just for you to develop your faith, your understanding, so that it can help you in your cultivation. But please, don't go and discuss this with people. Or if there is condition, if they want to know, ask them to attend the sharing. Understand? But don't be like too eager to share this with people. Then you will lead to a lot of unnecessary misunderstanding and argument. But these are the things that very few people can understand. Then they will come up with all those type of questioning and challenge you. Because they don't want you to be better than their teacher. Understand? You tell them, my teacher also can do this, my teacher also can. I remember there was one case. This one is a very good example. I went to this, one of the Tibetan, because there were conditions, somebody brought me there. He said, this Tibetan Lama and Rinpoche, the precious one. They say, very good, very, very special, very good. Then we were there. I think waiting outside. Yeah, a lot of people want to see him and pay respect. So all reserved. So I told them, I said, never mind. If no condition, we just go. They say, come all the way already, we might as well wait. Then somebody go and ask. I think there are some close disciple of the Rinpoche who is in charge. They say, no, you have to wait. Then he came back. Then he saw us like sitting there, very quiet, very different. Then they come and talk to us. Then I heard somebody else, that time same batch as us, talk to him and all the thing. Then this lady was quite actually sincere. She actually want to know more about us. Then my this Kayamita friend go and tell her about my second last teacher, that she can read this and read that. Then she don't believe, the other side one. He said, where got people like that one? Then he went in and asked that Rinpoche, that Rinpoche keep quiet. He said, I cannot do that. Because she told him about my second last teacher can know where Tungku take birth. They tell us the Rinpoche can like teach you how to die, the poa and all those things. Then the Rinpoche can don't know what, like their teacher's birth, they can go and locate and all. So to them it's like very special, right? Magical. Then when this guy told her, our teacher that one can even know where Tungku take birth. He went in and asked. The Rinpoche I cannot do that, is it? Then come out. She like in a very low tone. My Rinpoche says she cannot. Luckily didn't have argument, otherwise I tell you big trouble. Because people will never believe that there is such a being who can see all this and praise all this. And to me it's not important. It has nothing to do with the cultivation. These are all psychic spiritual penetration. So why do you want to know? Even if confirmed you can do so what? Can that make you enlightened? Maybe make you more egoic. Hey, my teacher, my second last teacher can do that. I know one teacher who can do that. It gives rise to ego, isn't it? No point. But if it can give rise to faith, then it's different. I also cannot confirm because this is what she told me. But I have faith in her nature, because I receive the Dhamma, I can feel her energy, I can feel her teaching. And it's very different. That's why different being, different nature, they come, they are different. And you can feel them. Because you yourself also have that cultivation. That's why the first time I met her, I can feel, I know, I knew what this thing is. Then I told my wife, I said, this one is very different. Then I continue to make contact. Somebody introduce us to her. Then we continue to go Then we start to attend the class, just like how you all come. Then after that, we become very close because she was also very happy. For the first time, she met a group of serious Kayamita who can understand her. But mainly, it was my nature can understand her. Because after that, we go Tetareya during the early day. Then we discuss, then the understanding was there. Then that Kayamita group actually grew, you know, very strong. Then after that, I don't know what happened. When my last teacher came, the split happened. Because they all like to follow tradition, banner, you know, say. Then for me, wherever there is teaching, or I find it suitable, I will go and attend. So when I went and attend, at first this cool was with me, but he cannot accept because he jhana energy field. He don't understand awareness. Then when my last teacher was talking to both of us, he fall asleep. Because the energy different, the vibration different. This is wisdom, awareness. That one jhana. That's why he fall asleep. Then my last teacher point to him, see? He will go to sleep one. He cannot listen one because no affinity. Not his piece of cake. That's how a lot of this thing. Then after that, they say they go and quote the sutta and say this one is where got people teach like that one, is it? Lying down meditation, like sleeping. Then just aware, don't do anything. But my last teacher knew. He knew. Yeah, after I wrote to her and explained what his teaching was and how I benefited from it, he knew. He said, yeah, he has his way. Then he also went and checked. No? He got that one. He said, yeah, he also have that nature, but different type of cultivation. Then he asked me three times, no? Because my teacher, my last teacher also, I think he also saw her face. Then he told me, he said, you send a message back to her. That time was during the early days. Then he explained how his cultivation, how he actually developed the seven colors. Actually, the seven color is something to do with the ten perfection. Then you just tell her that he developed this seven color to perfection already. Then the lotus in the heart, front and back, he used the word almost fully open. Then when I went back and report to my second last teacher, you know what she asked me? Did he say fully open? Did he say fully open? He asked me three times. He said fully open means sama sambuddha. At that time, I myself was also taken aback. I almost got a shock. You mean fully open means sama sambuddha? Means you can meet up with such a being. That's why that time I tell you, you won't believe, beyond your wildest dream, you can meet this type of people. And they come to me because of my vow, my that very, very different vow. So these are the beings, they talk among themselves. No? That time I also cannot understand what that thing is. But that was 20 over years ago. And she just say, and then my last teacher say, you go back, you just tell her this, she will understand. She said, how they understand, I don't know. Because both also gone through one. They have cultivated until almost that level. That's why they are very different type of beings. Then after that, my last one told me, he knew I will leave him, in 1992 or so. He said, remember, Theo, he said, remember. If you got no more worldly guide, means within our planet, Mother Earth, who can guide you, the cosmic, they will send an astro guide up there. Oh, I say God, okay, I see how it goes. After that, until now, no more. Astro one also don't have. Then when I met him again 20 years later, which was a few years back, first thing I told him is, no more guide. Astro one also didn't come. He smiled. He said, yeah, you don't need. He said, you don't need, that's why no more. So a lot of these things are very strange. Well, he got one 600 years from the Himalayas one came and guide him this life. My last teacher, he said he met his last guy, 600 years old in the astral, still alive in the Himalayas. You believe or not? That's why I say you will never believe a 600 years old, you know, in the astral, and teach him how to do that type of lotus gateway meditation. You know. He learned from that astral guy. That's why a lot of this thing you can never understand. We better end, otherwise we won't end. Because there is condition I share. The reason why I share is all these things were told to me in the early years, you know. Because they knew my nature can understand. They never tell any other body, any of the devotee. A lot of these things I tell you, share with you, they didn't tell the other devotee. You know. He only speak to me, my last guy, when I'm alone with him. And the wife always complain. Not my wife, the last guy's wife. He always say, the wife want to record his talk. Kena scolding from him. No. Record for what, he said. The moment the speech is out, it's already obsolete. You see. You know. Then he saw me go and record. No. I went to New Zealand visit him. I recorded the 7 day when I was with him. No. Then when here also I record. No. Then the wife one day argue with him and quarrel with him. No. Brother, till record you never say anything. I record you scolded me. Like he said, because you don't understand. He understand. He tell the wife. That's why he never stopped me from recording. He never commented at all. But he liked me. You know. He explained a lot of things to me. My second last teacher also said, a lot of things he told me, he cannot share with other people. Because he knew my nature can understand. And both of them are very funny. My that last teacher also, in a way, very, very unique. And the character all different. The cultivation all different. But he go consciousness way. He prefer that consciousness way. And he want to be very powerful being. That's why he got teacher of the occult field. And he knew I won't touch all this thing. He before I left him, I say, till you are right, he say, never touch all this thing. He said, all this not worth to touch. Then he said, remember, only wisdom free. I say, I knew that all the way. Because all the other thing is energy field. Psychic. Cannot give rise to wisdom. It will never free the living being. So you are the most powerful living being on planet Earth or this universe. So what? Your form and mind sooner or later will go. When it go means you erase your entity. Then who are you? What are you? While on this earth living, you can be very powerful, but you can still have suffering, misery. No point. You can still have attachment, craving, views, opinion, and all those things. That's why my last teacher, when he want to do certain thing, he has his view. Then when he cannot get what he want, he start to reflect and contemplate, why living being like that? Then he will change his rule. Then he said, next time I'm not going to give for free. He want to be selective. Then he want you to wait, he said. Previously, when he was new, anybody come also, he will share this pure energy with you, then activate your lotus and all those things. But later on, he become very selective. There was one guy who waited 1 year for him to agree to allow him to attend his class and all those things. So these are the things that different cultivator, they come with different practice, different way. They have their own views and opinion of how they want to deal with things. But one thing good about them, they can feel the true cultivator of the way. Like my nature, they somehow know. And both of them also know I won't follow them. That's why my second last teacher also, he asked that cool fellow, you want to follow who? Prachan or her? But he never asked me. Because he know I will never follow anybody. My last teacher also know I will leave them. Well, I don't hold on to anything. Then the best was, there was one case. I cannot remember really. Never mind, when I remember, I tell you. Okay, we do the sharing of merits. Sharing of merits with the devas. Akasata cha bumata deva naga mahindika punyang tang anumoditwa chirang rakkantu loka sasana. May all beings inhabiting space and earth, devas and nagas of mighty power, share these merits, and may they long protect the dispensation. Itta vata ca amehi sampadan punya sampadan sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhiya. May all beings share these merits which we have thus acquired, and may all devas rejoice, and may it contribute greatly to their well-being and happiness. Transfer merits to the departed one. Idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Let these merits accrue to our departed ones and those who can receive them, and may they all to be well, happy and peaceful always. Okay, we will invoke the blessing for the nation. Devo asadukalena sasa sampatihito cha peto bhavatu loko cha raja bhavatu dhammiko. May the rain fall in due season. May there be a rich and good harvest throughout. May the world be peaceful and prosperous always. May the government of the day, the king and the rulers be righteous. Then you make your aspiration. Itmina punyang kamina mame bala samagamo satang samagamo otu yawa nivana patia. By the grace of these merits that we have cultivated or acquired, may we never follow the foolish and the heedless, but only the wise and the enlightened one until Nibbana is realized. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, pay respect mindfully to Lord Buddha, Kuan Yin Bodhisattva, and all the worthy ones.